Good evening. I have a couple quick announcements and then we'll get started. Next week, I need to double check what it says on the website, but we have discussed and we will start at the normal time. Because it's our last week for this topic, we might go a little bit long. So if we want to make sure we get all the meditations in and everything, it's possible class could last a little bit later than 8:30. After next week, we technically have a 3-week break before our next module that starts in March. The next module is Bodhicitta. If you do not want a 3-week break, there are options. We can get together and meditate. We can talk. We can discuss. If you have things that you want to know about, that you want to request that someone knowledgeable talks to us about, if there's a something like that, then let me know after this class, and I can make requests of knowledgeable people. I can also unlock this building and lock it. So if you don't need a knowledgeable person, if you need a person, if you want to have more informal discussions, or if you want to just do some meditations together or something like that, let me know what you guys want to do. I have heard that not everybody wants to take a 3-week break, that it's kind of a long time. So we'd like to keep going. Also, during those 3 weeks, there is an opportunity on February 17th. It's a Saturday. You could come to the center from 9 to 3. It's on the calendar, and meditate on renunciation. So it's the same meditations. So that day, I'm going to redo the official so I don't mess up. So that day you can come to whether you're a Discovering Buddhism student or not. But as you may know, each module that we do requires a practice retreat ranging from 1 to several days and a set of so if you want to complete the course requirements, you can do these little retreats. So we highly encourage anyone who's benefited from Discovering Buddhism to continue your studies in these like full day meditations. Please be aware, these meditations will be guided by a fellow student and not an FDMT teacher. So for DB purposes, to be official, things like that, your approach would be as if you're preparing for practicing independently. However, we offer this opportunity in the center's spiritual setting with other students with the hope you'll find the environment beneficial and to cultivate a supportive environment in which we all practice. So we've done this a couple times. I just want to make sure you guys know that it's not officially led by an FPMT teacher at this point. We're kind of doing this as a group practice, those of us who want to do these practice days. One last thing about this particular class. So we've looked at the interactive 12 links online, and if you want to go look at that on your own, it is on the website under the Discovering Buddhism Materials page where all our online readings are. So that link, there's a link to that interactive 12 links there, so you can follow along.
The thing that Robbie used, that's anybody can access that on the DB webpage. It's pretty cool. All right, so happy Monday. Let's start with, we're going to say the refuge prayer 3 times. That's on page 34. And remember last week I was saying that one of the reasons why we do things in threes, or the one of the things to think about when you're doing things in threes, is those 3 scopes that we've talked about. So the first one, taking refuge so that all of your lifetimes in samsara can be as high as possible, you know, as positive as possible. You're taking refuge in the Buddha Dharma Sangha for that. So we'll say it that time, and then I'll stop and I'll refresh your memory about the second one. So again, refreshing your memory that we're in it like a prison camp, and if we can have as many positive experiences and lives in this prison camp as possible. So we're taking refuge with that in our minds, you know. Okay. So I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to all sentient beings. Okay, now the second time we're thinking of going for refuge so that we can escape. so we can liberate ourselves from samsaric existence, so that we can get out of this prison camp. We now know that there's a way out. So now, with that in mind, say it again. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. And now the final time, we are taking refuge with the highest motivation so that we can come back and liberate all the others that are stuck in the prison camp. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Now we're going to say the four measurables once. And, you know, there's lots of teachings you can receive just on these four immeasurables. But as Geshe-la told me, his favorite expression that I taught him when he first came to this country was, you know, I would be saying something like, I don't know what it was. It wasn't related to Dharma, but, you know, like, he might ask me, like, why do I have to wear a seatbelt in this country? And I said, well, that's not going to hurt. So I use that expression a lot. And then I would hear him saying it about things like, you know, we'll understand more about the four measurables as you go on, but right now it's not going to hurt to say it. So it's generating this incredible wish, basically. So saying it and reflecting on it certainly won't hurt. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Okay, now we're just going to take about 5 minutes to do a focus meditation. So get in a comfortable position, going through the points of posture that I've stressed. And if you're again in a chair, make sure your feet are on the floor, facing forward. Check all the different points of your posture, in particular your back, your neck. Trying to be alert and yet relaxed. And so the first part of the meditation is really to let Monday roll off your backs. And so when you're inhaling, you can imagine inhaling the pure white light of Buddha, of all the enlightened beings, of enlightenment itself. And this is flushing out all the negativities, whether it's fatigue, worry, you may not be feeling well, some ache. Something is then you're exhaling it. You can visualize it. It's leaving you in the form of some smoke that then dissolves and is far, far away. And then again, you're breathing in this pure white light energy and exhaling anything that's bothering you. And you can count your breaths so that you can keep your mind from wandering. So every time you bring your mind back, you're strengthening that ability to focus. So don't be hard on yourself when your mind is wandered. Just understand that you're building that muscle. And then after about 5 minutes, I'll come in and lead us through a short guided part at that point. take a moment to bring your mind to your life, to your awareness of something in your life that causes unease. Think of a button of yours that gets pushed that you wish didn't get pushed. Could be something relatively small or something larger, but something that you know is a trigger for you, and know how it causes you discomfort, unease, and how that ripples out into other areas. And take a moment to think about what it would be like if this button just didn't exist. If for a moment this issue was completely gone from your life, what the freedom of that unease would be like. And as you're doing this, you're generating the wish to be free from that. How wonderful that would be. And then try to increase that to wish that anyone else struggling with this same issue, button, trigger, whatever it is, was also free from that. How amazing that would be. And then, if you can, imagine being free of all of the things that trigger you, trip you up, tick you off. And try to generate the wish to be free from all of those. And free from all of those, being able to help anyone else struggling in the same way. And so that's setting your motivation for the rest of the class then. So when you're able, just open your eyes. Okay, so last week we were talking about where we are. And, oh great, thank you. Yeah, thanks. And, you know, we had talked, I had mentioned before, which this helps me a lot whenever I'm studying something in Buddhism, that if something's kind of, if something we're talking about is a little distressing or a little, or causing you any kind of upset, then it's that you're not using it in the right way. So this is a really good rule of thumb. All of these things are meant as tools in your toolkit. And so we've been talking about meditating on suffering and realizing that you're in this prison camp. And then we list all those different kinds of sufferings, right? And we meditate on them. Now, what I guess I'm saying is that that's not always the right tool to use. Sometimes that is the exact right tool to use. When would you know that, okay, this is the time that I'm going to use that meditation on that I'm in a prison camp? Or this is the time that I'm going to use that meditation on those three sufferings that we talked about last week? When would be the right time and when would not be the right time? And there's lots of other tools in your toolkit, right? This is just one tool that you're going to use at a certain time to help you on your way towards liberation. So can you think of a really good time that you or somebody else would use that tool or any of the tools that we've been talking about in this module so far? Can you think of a time? Oh, yeah, please. You want to... And like I said before, sometimes people, I hate this mic too. So if you want to say something but you don't want the mic, I'll repeat it. But, you know, if you're able to do the mic, it's for people at home who are watching. Watching me. Yeah, go ahead.
I would say, this one? Yeah, hold it. I would say any time that maybe you feel apathetic, especially if there's a lull in your practice.
Okay.
Or if you feel like, man, everything is working, and I'm doing everything right, and I'm so happy, you might want to check if you're seeing everything clearly.
Okay. So two kind of things. One, if you're kind of apathetic and you've hit kind of a lull in your practice, kind of this will wake you up like, oh, my goodness, you know, I have this moment in time to use this life and this body to liberate myself. I need to get with the program, kind of shake myself up a little bit. And also, if I am kind of pretty happy with this, this is looking good. I'm getting, you know, subtly attached to this whole scene that I've set up. This is a pretty nice looking prison cell. Why would I shake this up? Then you remember. Then you start doing those meditations on, you know, the three sufferings that we talked about. Then you start looking for cracks in the facade. Like, okay, this is, one of the things we meditated a lot on last week was the suffering of uncertainty. So that things are not going to stay the same. No matter how beautiful my vacation is, it's going to come to an end. No matter how perfect this relationship or this friendship is, I can't rely on that being like that all the time. But which is not to mean that I stop relating to people or stop going on vacation, but I do that with that in mind. So that's a really great, those are really great times that you would use this tool. Yeah.
I think it.
Yeah, why don't we keep one mic over there?
Oh, I'll do that.
Okay.
I find that knowing that something's coming to an end or that it's not lasting, or sometimes when I see what others are going through, it reminds me to be more appreciative of what I have.
Mm-hmm.
And so it, I get more joy out of those things,
mm-hmm.
because of remembering that it's not certain.
Right.
And that I don't know how long I have it or
right.
will be able to experience it.
So you don't find that awareness makes you sad. It makes you more appreciative of the moment. And so that would be a really good way to judge, am I using this correctly or not? If I'm using this and it's making me really depressed, that, oh my goodness, this wonderful thing that I have isn't going to last forever, then you haven't found the right way to do it, because it's not meant to freak you out. And just since we're on that topic, I might have already said this once to you all, but I once was helping take care of my uncle who was 94, and I'd go to his house, and it was just like all these old memories, everything was dusty, and it just like just being stuck in impermanence, you know. And I know to use impermanence to counterbalance attachment, but I asked Geshe-la, like, okay, so when impermanence is just, you know, you're on that end of it and it's really kind of upsetting, or what do I do? What's the antidote to that? And he said, oh, then you meditate on what's coming, because only through impermanence is something else being born. He goes, you're in the midst of, so meditation just remember means becoming familiar with. So because I was in this setting where everything was kind of fading away, I was getting, he's like, you're just meditating on that end of it, because that's okay. But you also have to remember that because things dissolve, things arise. And so then I would get in my head, oh, right, because of all of this, like, I can then also think of my uncle being reborn in a better situation, and, you know, so on and so forth. So it's just a really good rule of thumb, because I think all these meditations, particularly on suffering, we have to remember that they're appropriate and certain. We have to use them in the right spot. We have to be skillful. And so in these modules, we're just like zooming in on this one thing, but it wouldn't be what you're doing in your life. Like, okay, for the next 24 hours, every day, I'm going to focus on suffering. And we've been focusing a lot on this module is really about the first and second noble truth. Okay. And then the other thing that really is key is once we realize, I mean, there's a lot of meditations on realizing that you're in this prison camp, right? The truth of suffering, the truth of the prison camp. Because it's supposed, that is what generates renunciation. I want to get out. You know, nobody who realize, most people who realize they're in that prison camp don't have to conjure up a wish to get out. Once, you know, the guy who was born there didn't know he was there. Once he knew that that's there was something else, then day and night he had that wish to get out. So same thing for us. That's why we're focusing on it. But so once we focus on that, then the very next thing is, okay, how is it that I'm going to get out? We know for the guy in the prison camp, you know, there's wires, there's guards, there's dogs, there's this, there's that. He's going to have to deal with all of that. What are the wire and the guards and the dogs in our prison camp? If only it were that easy, right? The things that are holding us in this prison camp are our way of thinking. And I'm going to list some in particular up on the board right now, because you could call them, I mean, I think we were talking a little bit about this last week, but the afflicted mind, that's what's trapping us. And so the really good news then is that once we realize we're in a prison camp, there's something to do. There's something to do, which is to start wearing these things down. Because once you have this bigger view of lifetime after lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, you realize that, okay, it's so much bigger than me, you, this personality in this lifetime. We've come in with this enormous wave of habits. And now you have the opportunity, because you're more aware and more awake, of trying to lessen those habits. And that's something we can start to do. And that's when you do get glimpses of nirvana. So remember I told you that one of the things that I struggle with a lot is, in this module of samsara and nirvana, we're not spending a whole lot of time talking about nirvana. We don't have these little movies we can watch and go, yeah, that's what it's going to be like. But actually we do. We do have little movies, which is when you start thinking about what would it be like if I didn't have this thing or that issue, or what would that be like? And so I'll give you an example. This is about maybe like 10 years ago. There was a situation where I didn't want to admit to myself that I was feeling jealous. This friend of mine was getting to do something else with this other friend of mine. It was not romantic, but I was just, I wanted to do that. But I didn't want to be jealous, because I was studying and practicing and I knew jealousy wasn't going to help anything. So I would not admit to myself that I was being jealous, and I was so exhausted after several hours of trying not to be jealous that I finally just kind of collapsed and thought, okay, I'm jealous. Now, what am I going to do about that? And I really started to meditate on it, and I did that same thing of, what would it be like if I actually could even feel this? Like, not denying that I was jealous, but what if jealousy couldn't arise? And it was, like, mind-blowing. I haven't been able to recreate that, but it was, everything changed in that moment. I mean, it was like a golden room all of a sudden, and I realized that. Then I felt like I was mentally occupying the same space with other people who had been able to conquer that. And I didn't necessarily need to be sitting right next to them. Kind of like if you're at a really, really long banquet table, miles long, and at your side of the banquet table are people who are drunk. And then way down there, you can't even see at that end, is the Dalai Lama and anybody else you want to put down there. You're all at the same table, but because they're occupying a really different mental space. But you know what? I didn't take a drink. Everybody around me is drunk, but I'm actually not sharing these people's space as much as I'm sharing people down the road space, because that's what I'm trying to get to. And I am not drunk. So the whole point of all of this is that it's our afflicted minds that is keeping us trapped, which is really good news. Because that's something we can change those habits. Especially when you look at the long haul and the long view, what you're doing now is starting to change some of those habits. All right, so let's look at just what some of these afflicted minds are and what some of the antidotes to them are. So one is anger. anger, attachment, pride, ignorance, doubt. And this isn't positive doubt. It's not like questioning something. It's more, it's the doubt is so strong, it makes you unable to see. And then wrong view, which there's lots of different parts of wrong view, and we'll get to some of this, but the main part is believing that things exist concretely and in a way that then just continues the whole tour in the prison camp, because you see things incorrectly, and so you get, that just propels this whole wheel, okay? So those are some of the things. Those are the guards, those are the wires, those are the dogs, those are the trappings of our prison camp. Yeah. Sure.
And I apologize if this is digressing in any way.
No.
But it's kind of like, I mean, when you were talking about nirvana, mm-hmm. and it's kind of like, you know, part of that was, you know, you'd get to a state, for example, where jealousy just couldn't arise.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming when you're talking about that, you're saying it couldn't arise because at that point you would have been enlightened, so there'd be no reason for something like that to mm-hmm. arise because mm-hmm. you would never perceive something in a way that could cause it to arise.
Mm-hmm.
My thing is, and I can fathom that as far as, you know, if you have a true understanding of everything and emptiness and everything like that, then I can fathom that, you know, you wouldn't have the ignorance to have these sort of negative feelings because you'd be mm-hmm. understanding of people, therefore you wouldn't be angry, you know, mm-hmm. et cetera. What kind of gets me is as long as you're a human being, right? So they say, you know, for example, Shakyamuni Buddha, mm-hmm. you know, was enlightened while he was still alive and then was teaching while he was still alive in human form.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were in human form, I can't fathom how these things could possibly not arise again.
Mm-hmm.
Just based on the fact of you being a human being.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? Because mm-hmm. as long as you have these instincts in you, I feel like something, see what I'm saying? Something could happen and at that exact moment,
mm-hmm.
you know, at least for a brief moment, I feel like that anger would arise or mm-hmm. that attachment or whatever would arise for at least a brief moment. It would have to, or else you wouldn't be a human being.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know where I'm going with this.
Well, it'll help me too if I can get a really clear question so I can present it to Geshe-la. But I know that one of the things I think he would say is that a human being is a human being by definition would be a little bit different than an enlightened being. And so an enlightened being in a human form, but it is through our humanness that then we reach a state of enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
While we still have these defiled minds, we're not enlightened. And so what's hard for us to imagine is being in human form and not having that. Not having anger, really not having these things arise. We don't have that experience. And I remember asking Geshe-la something about that a little bit differently, but I was saying, you know, it doesn't seem to me that on planet Earth war is not possible, because it seems that war has always existed, and I can't imagine on planet Earth there not being war. And he said, but it is possible, because if there's one moment of happiness, one moment of peace, why can't there be two? Why can't there be three? Why can't there be, you know, why can't it be? It is a possibility. But our experience of that is not the same. But I want to get a really concrete question to ask him from what you're saying. And I know that's hard.
Yeah, I wish, okay, if I could, yeah, put it as concretely as possible or as simply as possible. In human form, how is it possible that affliction could not arise?
Mm-hmm.
If even for one moment, you know, this, you know, attachment, you know, this may sound like a very poor example, you know, but, you know, attractive person walks by, you know, mm-hmm. you're attracted to them, that's attachment.
Mm-hmm.
If you're still in human form and you're still an
mm-hmm.
animal,
mm-hmm.
you see what I'm saying? How could that part of your brain just be turned off?
Oh, I'll ask
that's
that.
Attachment, you know, so...
I'll ask him that because I think it's still, it's not that there's not desire or there's, you know, that it's just that it's, maybe desire is not the right one to, I mean, we talk about anger, but it's still that, so now there's a thing about taking desire to the path, taking anger to the path. So they're not afflicted anymore. You know, they're not, you're not, they're not, you're not being chained by these things, but you're not like unfeeling. So I think there's some differences that I'll ask him a little bit about to give me a better answer. But it's also that you're no longer, you're no longer, trapped in samsara. So those things aren't arising in an enlightened mind. They're not arising in the same way they are for us. It's really hard for us because we're stuck
in it. I think I kind of see what you're saying, from that, I guess, is what you're saying maybe from the Buddhist perspective. Once you reach that enlightenment, you're on a different plane from a human being. You're not a human being, you're an enlightened being. So therefore, you wouldn't be, you know.
That whole wheel that we talked about, you're not, that's not the reason that, it's not propelling you in the same way it's propelling all of us. That whole wheel that you all went through, that's not what's happening. And so you're not continuing that wheel by grasping after things, getting angry. You know, that's not what's happening at all. You're still here and looking at everything, but very differently. So we can see some examples of that even in just our, you know, like if I'm looking down at, oh, that's not a good example. But, you know, when you're looking at insects, there's a, you all have completely different views, right? But you're still observing them. You're still in the same kind of environment watching them, but your experiences are like completely different. And then even just in our own life, you know, we can see that certain issues just don't bother somebody else at all. How could that possibly be? This bothers me so much. How come it doesn't bother that person? Well, we have these really different minds. Sometimes some people have conquered certain things that we haven't. So we can see that, which does give me hope that, oh, there's a possibility to conquer that. So I'll tell you this. This is not really addressing your question, but
it's okay.
In the ballpark. It's in the ballpark because it's actually why I got interested in Buddhism. So this is a long time ago, and I... the short version of this story is I was thinking about death and my death, and I didn't want it to be a violent death. I knew that if I have a violent death, that panic that arises would just be awful. You know, I can't avoid death, but I really don't want to be murdered is what I was thinking. And I thought, well, you know, I can't guarantee that. I can't guarantee that I won't be murdered. So what am I going to do? And I think at that point I remembered that Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, had been murdered. And his whole wish in his life was that at the moment of death, he could say the Hindu word for God when he died. So he practiced that. He worked with his mind, and he was shot, assassinated, and said the word for God and died. So I thought, wow, how is that even possible? That somebody could be murdered and have a calm mind and accomplish their wish. Well, it was through his practice, but then I remember I went out and started reading, and then I found the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. But to me, that was like, it still seems like a Herculean leap, but there was a concrete example of somebody that we all know with witnesses and everything who accomplished that. So he was kind of free from the thing that I was suffering from at that moment, which gave me great hope that even in the examples that I could see, that there's ways out of this immediate circle. And so then the stories of the Buddhas and what we're talking about too is they're even way farther outside. You know, so they're not being propelled. They are coming here without that whole wheel getting spin, you know. So, but I'll talk to Geshe-la some more.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Where does fear fit in your list?
Probably with attachment.
But it's a subtext.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'll double check to make sure, too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's related with the word.
Word?
Word. Let's see, because we are talking about words that we not understand well because it's not in our language. No,
mm-hmm.
You say samsara, what is that? No,
mm-hmm.
Or you say nirvana, what is that? Sar, soda, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
So the meaning of the word in English,
mm-hmm.
do you think that samsara is errant and nirvana is blow up?
Is what?
Blow up.
Blow up?
Yeah. Let's see. If it's errant, what is the meaning of errant, no? I'm going to one place and then to the other and to the other. I am errant, no?
Uh-huh.
Why? Why am I errant, no? Or in nirvana, blow up. I blow up, all these kind of things, no?
Right.
So in order to understand the word, to have a better understanding what the meaning of these words, no?
Mm-hmm.
And then why, no? Why I am errant.
Errant?
Errant.
E-R-R-A-N-T?
Errant. No, I am from one place to another.
Oh, errant? Yeah, okay.
So if you say, okay, I'm looking for happiness, no?
Mm-hmm.
In wealth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for happiness in sensuality, no?
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for happiness on prestige, no? I'm looking for happiness on praise, no?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
All these kind of things doesn't last.
Right, you're on the wrong errand.
So I am errant, no? Exactly. So
yeah.
I need to blow up these things, no? To go to nirvana.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is connecting with your question, no? You are a human being, but I think the thing is not to be a human being. It's more to have a kind of consciousness, no? You could be a human being with a different consciousness. This consciousness, you could say Buddha consciousness, Christ consciousness, it's another level of consciousness, no?
Mm-hmm.
I think this consciousness, we're able to blow up all this kind of stuff that is not lasting, no?
Right.
So when you are aware that this is not lasting, no?
Mm-hmm.
Why to follow these things that is not going to last, no?
Uh-huh.
Is when you say, okay, well, what is the thing that I'm going to last?
Right.
That's the question, no?
Yeah, you have to ask yourself, you know, what really is happiness? What really is all the things that we're looking for? I mean, I think I get your point. I mean, you can use whatever terms help you. I mean, samsara is cyclic existence. It's this just repetitive, almost involuntary, this cyclic existence that we're trapped in. And nirvana is escape from that. So the nirvana is an escape from that cyclic existence. And what is that keeping us in that wheel of cyclic existence? It's our own defiled mind states. And so that's what we're trying to slowly start to, you know, wear down. And anytime you get depressed with thinking, oh my goodness, it's such a huge mountain to climb, then there's always antidotes to apply to any kind of negative thinking. The whole point in Buddhism is about mind training. And if it's your mind that's going to get you out of this prison camp, then what do I use? What tool do I use to help keep this river moving in the right direction, to expand this river, to keep it calm? So, for example, if I'm overwhelmed with the task in front of me, I know exactly what Geshe would tell me. It's like, how many people are thinking about this topic right now? Forget about the huge mountain you have to climb. How many people are even trying? How many people are contemplating this? How many people are sitting down on a Monday night doing this? You have to encourage yourself. This is huge. This is wonderful. And then, I think I told you all, I'd been to this teaching with the Dalai Lama where I was young and I was like, oh, I got to get enlightened tomorrow, da-da-da-da-da. And I was just kind of freaked out that I might not be. And he said something like, you know, a bodhisattva doesn't care how long it's going to take, because all along the way to their complete enlightenment, they'll be helping and they'll be moving from happiness to happiness. We're like, oh, it's going to be terrible, it's going to hurt so much. But once we reach a certain state, even before we're completely out, we will be at higher levels of happiness. Just like the stories of the saints that you're familiar with growing up, you'll be at a different mind state where it's like, okay, I can do this, because you have the bigger picture view. And so you're just moving, you're moving from happiness to happiness. You're able to help all of the people around you. You're setting examples, you're learning things, you're progressing, and you're not going to fall back down. You know, now you know, okay, here's the way. I'm going to keep on going. You're not going to be worried so much about falling back. You have all the right tools. So I think this is a good time to show this video clip, Brian, the one with His Holiness. We'll start with that one. We have two. That one's, I think, about like 10 minutes.
5:35.
It's 5 minutes and 35 seconds. And then we'll watch. Then we'll talk a little bit more.
The important thing is that affected emotion, affected emotion. This is the ultimate, is the enemy, or the source of suffering. And also that is the affected emotion. Once it develops within our mind, it immediately is destroy our peace of mind. And eventually it destroy our health. And also is it destroy our friendship with other people. So all the negative activities, such as killing, bullying, cheating, all these negative actions come out of this different emotion. So that's the real enemy. That's the destroyer of our peace, destroyer of our fortune, and including our health. So therefore, that's the enemy. Enemy. External enemy today may be harmful to you, but next day may be very helpful. But this is the inner enemy, always remain as a destructive. And moreover, that enemy, wherever you live, always there. That's very dangerous. External enemy, we can put some defensively in Asia. Also, like the 59, we escaped. So we can escape. But there is this enemy, even whether in Tibet, or whether in Potala, whether in Dhamsala, whether in here in London, enemy, wherever I go, this enemy there. Even I have some kind of meditation, some kind of visualization of mandala. Still, in the very center of the mandala, that enemy is still there. So this is the point now. We have to realize that. Now the first, the real destroyer of our happiness, always there. How to do now? If there is no possibility to overcome that, to eliminate that, then I think better forget. And I think rely more alcohol, fats, all these things. Much better. If there is possibility to eliminate that, then I think now we must take this good opportunity, this is human body, human brain, human good heart. Combine these two things. Try to reduce that and eventually eliminate. So therefore, according to Buddhist teaching, our human body is precious. Why? Because of human intelligence. And the shaping or the changing our mind, not only through emotion, but mainly through intelligence, reasoning. And there are two kinds of emotion. One emotion without any reason, just as a feeling, such as a hatred of these things. And of course, there are superficial some reasons. Well, this person is very harming on me. And then, through their kind of analyze, you see, you're hated. But in deep down, and further goes, there's not much as reasons. So it's these emotions without proper reasons. That's the negative emotion. And the other kind of emotion, such as compassion, altruism, a kind of emotion, with reason. And to further investigate, you can prove that is something good, that is something necessary, something useful. So that kind of emotion is also the type of emotion, but very much merited, very much well with reasons. So the combination, intelligence and emotion, that's the way to change our inner world. So that also, I think, the basic fundamental, the suffering nature. So long, that enemy there, so long we are under that enemy's control. No permanent happiness. So once you develop some kind of keen desire to overcome that enemy, that is the poverty inside.
That is called, that is the true realization, the aspiration to seek freedom. Which is technically called renunciation in the Buddhist language.
So you see, we this practice, we analyze our emotional level and our inner world. It's a very important, it's a key practice.
Maybe we should go into the other one. This one Kevin showed sounds really cool. And it's from the British Museum, it's on the Wheel of Life.
What's wrong with me? It might be your first reaction when something happens with friends or family or work. The chances are, it's not you. It's the world you were born into. A world whose terms and conditions you never signed up to. But now that you're here, it helps you to guide to the terrain and how to escape it. And that's exactly what this Tibetan Buddhist mandala, showing the Wheel of Life, is designed to give you. To look at this image is to look in the mirror, to see yourself and how and why you suffer the way you do. It's the same for everyone. We understand less than we'd like to admit. We're pig ignorant if we're being uncharitable. Our anger and our fear build so fast, they can take us by surprise. We're pig and snapping like a snake. And we get proud like a rooster of people and things in the world. We become hopelessly attached to them. Each of these habits feeds off the others, like three animals biting one another's tails. Bad news all round, it seems. But actually, it's not. This mandala shows us that we live in the best of all possible worlds. In higher realms, the gods are distracted with pleasure. Those in the lower realms are overcome with pain. Our lives contain just the right balance of both to help us see the bigger picture. But all of this, pleasure and pain, the cycle of birth, death and rebirth, is forever changing and turning, and that escape is possible. The Buddha has done it. He is free of the cycle. And through his teachings, he shows us how we can do the same. It's a truth and a destination that can never be captured in words. Instead, the mandala pictures it as a far-off moon. And the Buddha points the way.
Thanks, Kevin.
You can look that up online if you like it. I just think it's just a nice, quick, fast reminder that we are, I mean, Buddhists will say we're in the best realm. So even though we're meditating on all these downsides of it, this does offer this really nice balance of just enough crap to work on, to use to work on our minds. You know, it's not too much pleasure, not too much pain, just right. So I want to add something to the this list of afflictions. So in Buddhism, all of these have antidotes. And the antidotes look so obvious. I mean, look so like, I remember when I first saw them, I was like, well, it's not that simple. You can't just, and so they're not saying it's that simple. It's just like a little word to remind you to meditate on these other things that will decrease these habits. And so What do you think the antidote for anger is?
Patience.
Yeah. It's just basically the opposite of anything. But we'll talk about how does that work. And the antidote for attachment is to meditate on impermanence. Now, what about for pride? This one's a little trickier. But one of the antidotes for pride is to meditate on the things that you don't know. So this was listing like fields of science, but you might be a scientist, so then maybe you would meditate on something else like dance class. Whatever it is that you don't know is that you're not, that you don't have a lot of pride, that you know that you don't have much knowledge of. But, excuse me? But yeah, it's to make you humble and have some humility. Which is one of the reasons why we even do prostrations, why Buddhists do prostrations, is to humble yourself before something, to realize there's something greater than you. So meditating on something that helps you create some humility. And what about for ignorance? It's basically wisdom. Now, ignorance is a huge, huge topic. But increasing our wisdom and meditating and learning more, that's the antidote to ignorance. What about doubt? It's pretty much the same. It's wisdom. As is wrong view. Now, these all have different versions of wisdom, which we can get to. We don't have time right now to get to all of it. I want to talk a little bit more about patience, because that's something we can work on every single day, at least I can. And there's these long meditations on generating patience. But I also think that it's really important for us to create lists that fit with our lives for meditating on patience. And I have to be patient because we're running out of time. So the way it goes is you meditate on the downsides of anger and the benefits of patience. And we could think, well, that's really obvious. But no, to make them really, really concrete for your life. And so let's together look at some of the downsides of anger. For yourself, you know, for everybody. What are some obvious downsides of anger? You end up harming people. You don't think straight. Right, it clouds your judgment. You don't have the whole view. Everything kind of shrinks. So you say things you don't mean. You say things you regret. You make things worse. You know, make a list. Seriously, start making a list of what are some of the downsides of anger. And from a Buddhist point of view, too, you have just destroyed your peace of mind. And your peace of mind doesn't come from nothing. It comes from all these causes and conditions coming together to create this peace of mind. And in that moment that you've lost your peace of mind, you're the main person who's suffering. And so the time that you apply these antidotes and this kind of thinking is before it's full bloom. When it's in full bloom, it's kind of late. But when you know, and this is what I'd really encourage you this week, to practice on the things that you know, oh, this is a time I almost always lose my patience. I see it coming. Let me try these things now. Then you'll have a little more confidence with it. So another downside, yeah, so you have, from a Buddhist point of view, you've just destroyed all this virtuous road that you've been traveling to bring you this peace of mind. Now you just ruined that. It's just ruined. You've got to start all over again to get back to that. And on a practical level too, you've done things during your day to create this peaceful state of mind, and now it's completely destroyed. Yeah.
From a Buddhist perspective, does it just destroy this path that you've created leading up to this moment of peace of mind that you could have, or does it also destroy future, like, you know, your past positive actions have the potential future happiness? Does anger also destroy the potential for that happiness to ripen?
For that moment, yes.
Just for that moment.
I mean, I've heard Geshe-la talk about, you know, the teachings say it's just destroyed countless eons of whatever to bring you to that moment.
Okay.
But But he's also said, but, you know, it also makes, you know, it's not, obviously it's not gone forever because you can regain peace of mind.
Mm-hmm.
But that, all that that came together for that fruit is kind of cut now.
Okay.
You know, and usually now you're creating some negative seeds in whatever's going on. So the other thing that I would say is, you know, we talked before about how liberation is in the moment that that difficulty arises. So in the moment that it's cold, this offers me warmth. When it's in July, this is just going to offer me suffering. But in the moment that there's cold, the liberation to cold is in my jacket. Just like in the moment that I'm starting to lose my patience, that is the moment for my liberation from anger. And so if I don't take advantage of that chance, and I just jump headfirst into anger, I've missed that opportunity for liberation as well. And it may not be, I'm not saying it's all at once, but we are stretching our capacity for patience. Did you want to say something, Kevin? I think there's a...
Well, I was wondering, in kind of referencing the question earlier, that over time, does an enlightened being no longer have anger because they've trained their mind that what arises is patience,
mm-hmm,
in the place of anger, that it just, it, and it, that just takes time to do, but.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes time to do, and then also they're not creating any more seeds for that to ripen. It just doesn't happen, you know. And so, you know, a Buddhist would say then, you know, you're, the person who's bringing you whatever these difficulties are, they are your teacher. And so you've missed that chance to see it as a teacher. And I remember this time when I had this job and this difficult, challenging person, and it was after she got fired that I thought, oh, you know, I could have really handled this a completely different way, and I kind of regretted that I hadn't pushed myself. It was before I was studying Buddhism. But even then, I was like, ah, I kind of wish she was back here now because I don't have anybody like that. I mean, she wasn't a complete, I mean, it wasn't terrible, but it was just enough challenge that I could have worked with it better, and I missed that chance. Of course, life presented more, but this was a kind of an easy, difficult person, you know? It wasn't like a super awful person. It was just your average, difficult work person. And I felt like I regretted later, like, ah, I could have done better with that. And then other things to think about. So we have this list of the downsides of anger, and then you need to throw into the mix things like, I'm not going to be able to get everything right, except I can get my mind right. It's the same thing what Shanti David talks about, forget covering the whole world with leather, cover your feet with leather, right? Yeah, hold on, there's a mic coming your way.
So when you say you could have worked a little more better with that person,
yeah,
could there be some time you just don't work with that person anymore?
Could there be a time? Yeah, I mean, so better to separate myself, you know. So, there's all these things you can do, and then one of the things on the list is to create distance between you and the object. So if it's either, and it's an object that's causing you one of these things,
yeah,
you know, over attachment, over anger, yes.
Okay.
So that's why I'm saying this was an easy person. I could have been around her and worked. It wasn't like somebody I really needed to separate from. Those people, yes, I need to just get away so I don't create more problems for me, them.
Okay.
Yeah. And you have to know yourself. You know, that's why I'm always saying you're the laboratory and you're the scientist. You may know, like, okay, I'm better to handle these things in the morning, so I'm going to try, you know, whatever. You have to figure out ways to start to stretch your capacity, because I remember when Geshe-la talked about patience, he said it's like one of the benefits of practicing patience is that our patience will grow. And it's like when we're sick and we haven't been able to eat for several days, and then the next day we try to eat something and our stomach has shrunk, but over time our stomach will get bigger again. It's the same like that. Right now, for some of us, our patience is really thin, and if we keep practicing it, it will expand. And so you know, there's certain people, this person I was traveling with not that long ago would tell me, I'm not a patient person. And I was just so not used to having somebody just give up like that. Like, well, that's just who I am. I'm not patient, period. Like, I can't change. And I just am not used to thinking like that. So understanding that we have this capacity to grow things. The other thing when we're about to lose our patience is to look at, it's not all from here. What part am I contributing to this? It doesn't mean that I'm doing something to make things worse externally, but, you know, something's going, what am I contributing from my side? So say it's in traffic, because everybody loves these examples. So, you know, maybe I'm doing nothing. I'm just driving down the road and somebody cuts me off, but now I'm doing something, and you know, now I got something going on. What can I do with that? You know, nothing else. So then I start to go through that list. Okay, what I can do now is start to go through that list. One of the things on the list is the event has already happened. The event has already happened. It's like, you know, the whole crying over spilled milk thing. The event has already happened. So what's going to be the advantage of getting angry? Again, when you're catching it, but when you're really catching it beforehand, what's going to be the advantage of getting angry here? What is the disadvantage of getting angry here? And you start to go through the disadvantages. And the advantages of keeping my patience is, oh, I might be able to grow my patience a little bit. That I'm going to be the beneficiary of staying calm because I'm the one in the car with me. You know, that person over there, they're in the car with them. They're not going to know, you know, I'm the one who's going to live with myself. So keeping my patience, I'm the beneficiary of that. I'm expanding this. This also means that I'll have a better moment when I get off this highway and they're over there and I'm over here. I'm the one that's following my thoughts, right? And then you start going through the list of the advantages of patience, the disadvantages of anger. And in that moment, you catch it and you're like, okay, this is actually, I've actually expanded my patience a little bit. That's how we start to wear down the habits that we've built up over lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. This is just a really brief, quick example. But usually, anger is the one that we can work with most of the day. It's remembering to practice something when we're not sitting here. So I'll give you one more example because I want you to try one next week. And next week's our last class. I want you to try one during the week to come back and talk about. And some of you have heard this story, but it's one of my favorites because it really made a big difference to me. You know, Geshe-la had been talking a lot about patience, and you know, this was during the summer and I was away from him and I was in the Newark airport, which I don't like crowds. That's one of my things, one of my buttons is like, I just don't like crowds. And there I was in hot summer and there was a lot of people and it was Newark airport and I was waiting for my mother to come off the plane. I was really excited about seeing her and taking her off to this thing we were doing. So I'm starting to get impatient because I'm getting jostled and I'm waiting and every single person that comes off is not her. So in my mind, I'm just like, that's not her. That's not her. And then I caught myself and I go, wait a minute. I think this is one of those times Geshe-la said to do something. Geshe-la said, you know, this is my, because I wasn't full-blown angry. I was just in that cusp of like irritated. I thought, what could I do? Okay, let me try this. The next person that came off, I thought, what if that person was like my favorite aunt or my best friend? They would look so cute. All those little things about them, like right now I'm like, ugh, that's not my mom. What if instead I said, that was my whatever, my mom or my best friend or my aunt or my grandparent? They would look adorable. Everything about them would just look so cute. So I just started, because there was nothing else to do, because I think she was the last one off the plane. So I just started doing that. And it blew my mind because I suddenly had that feeling about every single person that came off the plane. I looked at them so differently. I saw these people running up to them. They looked so adorable. By the time my mom came off, I was just like, I was in nirvana. I was in nirvana for 5 minutes. It was just amazing. The problem is I don't remember to do that often enough. And I had beginner's mind. I was so eager. Let me try. That's the attitude we have to have. Let me try. Maybe it's going to work. This is the moment that I can be liberated from this other stupid mind of like, I don't know. I'm the one who can liberate me from that mind. And I went from that mind to this like, wow. And, you know, we read all these things. Everybody else is the center of their universe. Well, yeah, we get it. But we have to really try a situation where we're doing it. We're not just reading about it going, yeah, that makes sense. When is it going to make sense in your life to do that? You know, so when you're standing in a long line at the bank or the grocery store, you know, just try it a little bit and see if you have that switch or notice like, okay, for the next 24 hours, I'm going to try to really notice when I get close to that line. Not when something really big has happened. I mean, you can try, but try to, you want some guaranteed success. So in my job where, you know, I mediate custody disputes, right? And so one of the things we talk about a lot is how do people change? How is the situation going to change? It's only going to change when you have some success. Then you can build success on your success. And you need guaranteed success to start gaining some confidence. So you don't try, I mean, try it all the time, but make sure you try it when you know you're going to have success. Because otherwise you're going to come in here and say, okay, so this, you know, something terrible happened, and, you know, you couldn't do it right. Try now, like after Geshe-la did this teaching, I was, you know, my dog kept waking me up, and I thought, this is the time. Because I love my dog, you know, I loved my dog. I'm not going to get angry with her out of the blue, and I thought, here's the time to practice, because I'm getting really annoyed with her. So think about what in the next 24 hours might push that button, or come close to that button where you can go, okay, here's my chance. I'm going to try to expand my little packet of patience. In the big picture, it's, you know, this is the way out. And if you can do it once, you can do it twice and three times and a million times. So on that note, just take a minute to think of a couple of different things that you want to try. You know, when are some things in the next 24 to 48 hours that might be a really good chance for you to try? You know, something that's not the Super Bowl. For me, it's when I know about them in advance that I can do them. So if you want to jot down a note, but next week, you know, we're going to come in and we're going to get in groups and kind of share. So if anybody has anything they want to say now about what their challenge is or what they're going to try to do, go for it. Yeah.
I just want to say that when it comes to balancing your emotions, mm-hmm. and being on either side of patience or anger, it helps me to be the observer as opposed to like being a self or an ego,
mm-hmm.
Just simply observing what's happening around me and then what's happening within me and not judging it,
mm-hmm.
and then just watching it and then kind of playing with it from there.
Hmm.
It kind of detaches you from anything that you attach to the situation, whether it be anger,
mm-hmm.
Or pride or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I also want to mention something interesting that I read lately about the word confusion,
mm-hmm.
and how if you break it up into kun and mm-hmm. then fuse, and you mm-hmm. think about your energy
mm-hmm.
mixing with somebody else's energy,
mm-hmm.
when you become distracted by somebody else's influence on your feelings, you become confused
mm-hmm.
with their energy.
Yeah.
And then you lose clarity.
Yeah.
And so you have to find a way to make yourself completely separate from other people while still living
mm-hmm.
in the same space and in the same realm as them.
Yeah.
And I just think it's interesting that enlightenment is a personal experience, or
right.
the path to enlightenment and happiness. It's within ourselves, and nobody else can change that for us, but we have to do it in a world where everyone is going through completely separate things,
right.
and at different levels of consciousness all around each other.
Right. Thank you. Yeah. I like that observer thing. You know, there's this poem I think that they used in the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, saying something like, I walked down a street, fell in this hole, took me a day to climb out, and then I kept walking. Next day, I walked down the street, fell in the hole, took a day to climb out, kept on walking. Then, like, by the fifth stanza, it's like, I walked down the street, saw the hole, fell in the hole, got out. I walked down the street, saw, you know, that happened several times. Then I walked down the street, saw the hole, and walked around the hole. Walked down another street, fell in a hole. But at least it's like, okay, if I'm going to fall in the hole, I'm going to take really good notes. You know, take really good notes about how did I fall in this hole? What was it? You know? Because the good thing about regret is that it means that it generates this wish not to repeat. So, you know, we're going to have lots of holes that we fall into. We don't beat ourselves up, but we take really good notes. We observe, what was it that created that, so that I can next time at least see the hole coming or try to step around it. Yeah. All right. So, I mean, I love that video clip with His Holiness talking. I feel so charged up when he's like, try, you know, at least try, you know, at least we can do is try. So on that note, let's take a minute to dedicate the merit that we've created tonight by trying and succeeding. Everybody got here? I'm always so impressed on a Monday that it's hard, you know. We finish work, we get in here, finish whatever we're doing, take some time, come here, share our energy, share our thoughts, absorb as much as we can and put it into our life as best we can. This is huge. These are the shovels that help us get out of the prison camp. It is so hopeful, it's hard to find the right words. We're just gathering so many tools in our kit. So think about the merit that you've created by doing this tonight, by the work that you do, the wishes you generate, the motivation you set, the time that you spend, and then dedicate those seeds that you've created so that you can achieve complete enlightenment, so that the path between where you are now and out of that prison camp is as short as possible, as safe as possible, as smooth as possible. That you'll be able to perfect your mind. That you'll be kind and gentle and patient with yourself and all others. And that when you reach the state of complete enlightenment, you will find the way to help the rest of us. Okay, and let's say Shanti Deva's prayer on page, do you know what page it is? Anybody? It's close to,
246.
Oh, wow. I guess it wasn't close. Okay. Yeah, 246. Get my glasses. And again, thinking that just by saying this prayer, just by having these wishes, you know, in the beginning I used to think, well, I don't know that all these things are possible. You're making this wish that they are possible, and that alone, again, is like just gold. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those who are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid. May those bound be freed. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. All right. All right, good night. Thank you all. See you next week.